Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of JPR. I'm Jeffrey Riley. We are live. We can take your emails on the topics today at jx@jeffnet.org. We've been talking for a while now about the disappearing kelp forests of the Oregon coast. Only recently have we gotten some solid information on how much the ocean-dwelling plant has been reduced. About two-thirds is the finding from the Oregon Kelp Alliance. It's not great for kelp, but the shortage affects many other creatures that live in the ocean. Without the kelp, there's less cover and food for those creatures. We have two guests from the Oregon Kelp Alliance to catch us up. Tom Calvanese is the head of the Oregon Kelp Alliance and Port Orford Field Station Manager for Oregon State University. Tom, welcome.
Good morning, Jeff. I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you. Sarah Hamilton's with us as well, the science coordinator for the Oregon Kelp Alliance. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, thanks.
And Tom, is it Calvanese or Calvanese? How do you say it?
Well, if you ask my grandfather, he'd say Calvanese because it's an Italian name, but I'm fine with Calvanese. It's shorter and easier to pronounce.
Okay, we'll go with that. How long has the Kelp Alliance existed?
Well, we began to meet more formally. I'd say right around 2019, we kind of formalized ourselves as an alliance. And we were noticing changes in kelp forests that really brought to our attention by commercial urchin divers in the years just prior to that. And by 2019, we had kind of come together as a group of folks with diverse perspectives, but a shared interest in the health of Oregon's kelp forests.
Now, Port Orford, where the field station that you manage is located, is apparently pretty important to the urchin industry. This certainly helps your research, it sounds like.
For sure. The field station has served as a nice launching pad for the Oregon Kelp Alliance, almost a sort of incubator. It's where we do a lot of research in the Rocky Reef kelp forest habitats around Port Orford and here on the south coast. So it was sort of a natural fit. And our work kind of started at Nellie's Cove, which is nearby, and the location of a lot of research that had been happening already.
So who is taken in with the Oregon Kelp Alliance? Who's allying through it?
Well, I'd like to say that we're a group of folks with a variety of perspectives on the kelp forest ecosystem, from researchers and scientists like Dr. Sarah Hamilton, who's with me on the call, commercial urchin divers, fishermen, commercial fishermen, recreational fishermen, managing agencies such as OVFW and DSL and others, and even chefs and foodies that are interested in what they can do to help out. So we're really a broad group. We welcome folks that have this shared interest, and honestly, quite a few of those folks are divers of a variety of types. Commercial divers, recreational divers, sport divers. And I think the reason for that is that divers are the folks who spend a good amount of their time underwater in that kelp forest ecosystem. And we're, I guess, sort of the canaries in the coal mine that brought it to everyone's attention.
Now, Sarah, you and Tom both dive, is that right?
Yeah, we do. I was out at Macklin Cove in Brookings just last week.
Mm-hmm. And so when you look in the kelp areas, I mean, what are you seeing versus what you expect to see there?
Well, I'll be 100% honest. I only moved here in 2017 from the East Coast, so I've only been diving Oregon since about 2017. And I would say the vast majority of dives I've been on, there is no kelp. And the most common organism that I see are purple urchins. And it's really interesting to talk to people who've been diving here for decades because that's not what it used to be like at all.
What is the major driver? What do we know about where the kelp are going?
Yeah, so what we've kind of come up with as being the most obvious driver is that starting in the mid-2010s, we saw this really huge increase in purple sea urchin populations. And in our recent report, we documented that that's been up to a 1,000-fold increase in some places. So places where they just really didn't used to be. Now, like I mentioned earlier, they are sometimes the most common critter that you see down there. So these purple sea urchins eat, can come out on the reef and just graze down a lot of kelp, like, you know, having a 1,000 goats in a pasture or a forest or something like that. So we know that purple sea urchins have been a big part of this loss that we've seen. But there's a lot of other factors that are more subtle or a little harder to understand the role of. For instance, marine heat waves and ways in which the ocean is changing with climate change have had a lot of negative increases across the West Coast and are probably at play in the decline we've seen in Oregon as well. We just have yet to get the research done to understand exactly what role heat waves and other sources of climate change are playing.
We're talking about kelp on the Oregon coast with Dr. Sarah Hamilton and Tom Calvanese from the Oregon Kelp Alliance. And you can join us with emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Tom, how important is kelp to the nearshore ecosystem?
Well, I will, I'll tell you my perspective, and then I'll share this question with Sarah because I think we have a shared notion of the importance of kelp forests. I'm here in Port Orford, which has a very robust nearshore commercial fishery. So I'll say that, starting with that, that I also worked as a commercial urchin diver while I was doing my graduate research here. So starting with urchin divers, commercial urchin divers have basically lost a very significant part of the habitat that they were using to dive commercially for sea urchins at Orford Reef. So that's a major loss for that fishery. But the kelp forest is also really important as habitat for a lot of commercially fished species, particularly rockfish and other fish that like to tend to be on sort of the bottom and in the kelp forest habitat as both adults and juveniles. So we're concerned about that, as well as the role that the kelp forest plays as a sort of a buffer for the coastline. So as we see more powerful storms coming at us in the face of climate change, we need that buffer for our coastline. And in areas where we've lost kelp forests, you know, we're losing that. And I don't know, Sarah, if you want to add to that, if there's more you'd like to say.
Yeah, I think one thing, one analogy that kind of helps people understand the importance of kelp forests is like they play a pretty similar role to forests on land. So, you know, in the presence of trees, you get forests on land, and in the presence of kelp, you get kelp forest ecosystems in the ocean. So an entire new ecosystem is associated with the presence of kelp being there. And this goes all the way from the way the ecosystem changes the actual water that is moving through the kelp forest. It helps to provide oxygen and deacidify the waters locally around the kelp forest. Goes all the way from the water all the way up to recent research has found that the gray whales in Oregon like to forage in our kelp forests. And that loss of kelp forests has meant changes to where gray whales are foraging. So it's pretty incredible, you know, from literal molecules or from, you know, tiny phytoplankton all the way up to gray whales in human communities. There are so many different ways that kelp forests are kind of vital to vibrant coastal communities in Oregon.
There's so many different creatures. And then, Sarah, how did you collect the data about 900 acres of kelp lost in the last decade for the recent report?
Yeah, that was in partnership with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. So a kind of cool way to study kelp forests actually is from the air. Because bulk kelp, our predominant canopy-forming kelp here in Oregon, actually reaches the surface of the water, so you can see it from the air. You can use satellites, you can use planes to capture the coverage of these kelp forests over pretty large spatial areas. And so Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, as they've been making decisions about the commercial harvesting of, you know, whether to allow commercial harvesting of kelp over the last couple decades, has occasionally taken some aerial surveys from planes. And so they took one in 2010 and one again in 2022, and we worked with them to estimate from that just how much less kelp there was in the 2022 survey than there was in the 2010 survey. And that came to, you mentioned, just under 900 acres, or about two-thirds of what we used to have.
Sarah Hamilton, Tom Calvanese, our guests on the Jefferson Exchange, both from the Oregon Kelp Alliance. We're talking about the loss of 900 acres of kelp forest off the Oregon coast, about two-thirds of what is believed to have been there a decade ago, now gone. You can join us with your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. Tom, I asked for Sarah's perspective, but I'd like to hear yours, too, because you have a longer experience with the West Coast. I mean, have you gone to diving in some areas where you expect to see kelp and there's just nothing there?
Yeah, absolutely. I referenced that I had worked as a commercial urchin diver, I guess about 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that now. And to be honest, I kind of took the kelp forest for granted. It's an annual that grows very rapidly in the spring and into the summer, and then gets ripped out by powerful storms every winter and comes back the following year. And even though it fluctuates a little bit, places like Orford Reef were always just awash with very thick kelp forests, and we just sort of took for granted that they would be back every year. And most of my memories of diving there and in other locations here on the South Coast at Redfish Rocks, up at Cape Arago, and other locations, all my memories are of these really, really thick kelp forests, really an amazing ecosystem that is just almost difficult to describe with its just biological richness and just being full of life. And then if you fast forward 10 years to more recent dives, really shocking to go to places like Nellie's Cove nearby where I live here in Port Orford and just see all the kelp just gone. And that rich kelp forest ecosystem that Sarah was talking about earlier, just really not there. And seeing almost a monoculture of these purple urchins, which are not, you know, the bad guy necessarily, but they're just so many that they have overwhelmed that system and made it unable for those kelp to return the following year. So we lose that sort of annual cycle and we lose all that biodiversity and richness that we found in the kelp forest before. So it's a pretty shocking change.
Is there a danger of kelp disappearing completely, Tom?
You know, I don't like to think about that. But, you know, that's why we're doing the work we're doing, to first draw attention to it, assess the situation as we have, and then really start to work on taking steps, taking, you know, action to avoid that outcome.
All right. The report we've been referencing is the Oregon Kelp Forest Status Report and Restoration Plan. Links available through our website at jeffexchange.org. Sarah, what kinds of strategies are we talking about for restoring the kelp?
So we've one of the great things about doing this work in Oregon is that kelp forest restoration has been, these techniques have been developed in other parts of the world for 10, 15 years now. So we get to look to some examples of what's going on in Australia and Norway and Northern California. And so some of the strategies, you know, we want to use multiple strategies. This isn't like a silver bullet kind of, there's no single strategy that's going to fix everything. But some of the strategies that we're looking at include urchin removal, so going into distinct places and getting those grazers out of there to give a chance, give kelp a chance to recover. In addition, we also talk about kelp enhancement, which is basically once we've gotten some urchins out of a cove or a site, going in and using spore bags or directly outplanting little juvenile kelps to increase the population supply to that area and really help that kelp forest go ahead and reestablish once the urchins are out of there. And then additionally, one of the reasons we believe we have so many purple sea urchins at this point is that we've lost two of their most important predators of urchins over the in Oregon. You know, historically, sea otters helped keep purple urchin populations down, but we lost those back in the late 1800s to the fur trade. And then in the mid-2010s, we lost the sunflower sea star to sea star wasting disease. And, you know, we just kind of recently began to understand that these big sea stars can have really dramatic impacts on urchin populations. They can eat a lot of urchins. So we're working with researchers at Oregon State University and the Oregon Coast Aquarium to start thinking about what can we do to recover, help sunflower sea star populations recover in Oregon. So predator reintroduction. And as well, one other thing to note is that it's not just about restoration. It's also about protecting what we still have. You know, we've lost probably around two-thirds of our kelp forest in Oregon, but we still have a third left. We still have hundreds of acres. So one thing that is being used in other parts of the world is targeted urchin fisheries that go in before you've lost the kelp forest and help to keep urchin populations under control before that kelp forest collapses. It's a lot easier to protect one from collapsing than it is to bring it back wholesale once it's transitioned into an urchin barren.
Okay, a lot of strategies, a lot of moving parts, certainly, and a lot of things that depend upon the kelp forests, which are now one-third of what they were before, with the loss that has been reported by this Oregon Kelp Forest Status Report and Restoration Plan. Tom Calvanese and Sarah Hamilton are with the Oregon Kelp Alliance. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Jeff.
This is the Jefferson. All right, good to have you. This is the Jefferson Exchange. We'll be back.